So yeah, let's welcome him and some core distributed algorithms.
All right, thanks very much. So as you said, my name is Greg. I work at Red Hat as a principal software engineer and have been on the Ceph project for over a decade now, which at my age is a little scary to think about. Every time I give a talk in Europe, someone tells me that the content they understood was great, but I talk too fast. So if that happens to you, just start waving wildly and I'll slow down. And I'm happy to take questions during the presentation if you raise your hand and I repeat it and answer back, or maybe I'll tell you that you're three slides ahead of me and just wait a minute. So I assume you all basically know about Ceph, but it's a distributed object storage system. We have three principal demons, although only two of them matter today. We have in the middle here the object storage demons, or OSDs, which are responsible for storing data, serving read and write I/O to clients, and when something happens to the cluster that changes the state, making sure that all the data is located on all the OSDs it's supposed to be, so we maintain our replication and durability guarantees. We have the monitors, which keep track of the other participants in the cluster. They maintain a series of cluster maps. In particular for this talk, the OSD map, which says what OSDs are part of the cluster and whether those OSDs are up or down right now and what their addresses are and things. And then also we have a metadata server, which today doesn't matter, or for this talk doesn't matter at all, but you know, you heard about earlier with Patrick and Jeff and may hear about later. A Rados cluster generally consists of three or five monitors and a whole bunch of OSDs working together. When we serve writes out of Rados, an application connects to the cluster, which means it goes and talks to the monitors and says, hey, what does the cluster look like? I want to talk to it. And they get their OSD map and other maps describing the state of the system. They say, hey, I want to do a read or I want to do a write to this particular object foo, and they run our magic crush algorithm, which says which OSD is responsible for serving and processing operations on the object foo, and that's called the primary OSD. It sends that write operation to the primary. The primary runs a bunch of validation to make sure the client is allowed to do that. It does some pre-processing. It sends out replication I/O to the other peers or replicas that share that state. And then once the replicas have replied, then it returns to the client. Visually speaking, you know, one round trip to the monitor, and then we can do a whole bunch of writes off of that one round trip to the monitor. And it looks like this. So for the purposes of this talk, which is about stretch clusters and Ceph, then this is what we mean. We're not talking about big, wide area networks with hundreds of milliseconds of latency stretched around the world. Ceph is designed for a local area network. It expects fast interconnects. But a thing that has become more popular, or that we see more and more often and that occasionally shows up and that people certainly ask for, is that they'll have two or three data centers, you know, pretty close on dark fiber. And so maybe they have 5 milliseconds of ping and fast interconnects. Or they are running in different availability zones inside of an Amazon cloud or some other cloud provider. So we still expect low latency and high ping, but you are split into two or three data centers or similar things. So the particular risk we're worried about is that you might have an asymmetric network split that's a lot less likely to happen if you were in a single data center, because you probably only have one link between each site, and it's become pretty likely that instead of losing like a single rack at a time, you might lose a whole data center. And that data center might represent fully half of the cluster or certainly a third of it. And losing that much of a Ceph cluster when it's on a local area network is possible, because you might lose a whole like power unit that powers the whole thing or half the thing, but the ways in which it happens will be different and you hope it's less likely. So people can deploy stretch clusters today with three data centers, you know, a very simple one. You probably wouldn't really do it with two OSDs in each data center, but looking like this. Or they might do it with what they ask for, although we mostly don't encourage them to do, is with two data centers and then a third offsite monitor that might be in the cloud or a VM just running somewhere. And the reason that you want three is because if you have two monitors in one data center and that data center goes down, you can't make any progress. Anything that the monitors are in charge of, they are a Paxos consensus-based system, so making a change to any of the cluster maps requires more than half the monitors to agree. If you have three, you need two of them to agree. If you have five monitors, you need three of them to agree. So if this happens and you lose your whole data center, then you might have a surviving data center with all of the data still available in it, but you only have one monitor. It can't say, oh, hey, there's only one data center alive, so just continue with this one. It requires manual administrator intervention. So the big problem, well, when I was asked to make this possible because of some Red Hat product needs with the OpenShift compute storage that, or container storage that we were talking about last session. So monitors have to elect a leader. That's because they're consensus-based, and so when you send a request to a monitor, you can send it to any of the monitors, but they want to pick one guy who decides what order the operations happen in and who maintains membership. And so all updates go to the leader, and then he distributes those changes out to the other monitors, which are called peons. And I'm talking too fast. Okay. So a request goes to the monitor cluster. They, if it's a peon or one of the not-in-charge monitors, they forward it to the leader. That has some interesting consequences in that during an election, everyone talks to everyone else to try and pick a leader. But once an election happens, the leader talks to all of its peons, but the peons don't need to talk to each other. And I've written out the algorithm here. I'm going to go through this really quickly just because I've got a bunch of pictures that will make it much more obvious. So an election starts for some reason. Generally, either a monitor turns on and he sends out and he joins the cluster by starting an election, or else some kind of timeout happens because they have leases over the data that they can serve reads off of. And so for some reason, the monitor goes, I want to start an election, and I'm going to propose to everybody in the system that I become the leader in this new election epoch. And we have an election epoch